All right, welcome everybody back to Indie Worldwide. We have with us today Daniel Vassallo, the famous man from Twitter. This is going to be like a pretty loose AMA Q&A format. You can drop questions in the chat. You can ask questions directly just by coming up here and asking. And if everybody's feeling really shy, then I've got plenty of my own. So, all right, Dan, do you want to start? Just give us like a quick intro, who you are, what you're all about.
Oh, okay. So quick background. I'm a software engineer by background. Used to work at Amazon for a long time, almost 9 years. At one point, something clicked in me and I realized that probably a career as a full-time employee wasn't the ideal thing for me. And in early 2019, I took the plunge. I quit without anything concrete. I was going to start doing the bootstrapped building your own software as a service thing, like most people do. Nevertheless, after a few months, I had a small crisis of anxiety, and I started to realize that, you know, things in business are much more random than they seem, right? I mean, it's not like my previous job where you just work hard, do your best work, and eventually you succeed. There's just much more unpredictability and things outside of my control. So since I was still enjoying the self-employed lifestyle and I wanted to maintain that freedom, sort of I shifted perspective from just, you know, I want to make this one product succeed. I said I just want to remain self-employed, right, at all costs. So I adjusted my strategy and I started, instead of just focusing on that initial product, I started diversifying, trying many different things, from freelancing to writing books to other odds and ends, courses, consulting, and a mix of different things. Some things worked out, some things worked out much more than I was expecting, some things didn't. And it's just a portfolio, just how we usually invest our money, right, in the stock market. We invest in many different things. Some things pay off, some things don't. And it's a strategy that I think has been very helpful for me, and I'm sort of been promoting it as an alternative, right, to just picking up an idea and just focusing on it at all costs, 100%.
I think you may be underselling slightly both the how nice the job was that you gave up and then how much progress you've made since then. If I recall correctly, the Amazon job, you were making almost like $500,000 a year, maybe more in salary. Is that right? Or like total compensation?
Yeah, by the end, yes. Sort of I started there as a very junior employee, right? Low ranks. My salary was like 50. I joined in Ireland. My initial salary was like 55,000 euros a year. But things were going well. Right? I moved to Seattle. They kept promoting me and giving me raises. Right? So by all measures, things were going well, but by some internal measure, right, my motivation to show up for work, to get out of bed in the morning and deal with the corporate bureaucracy machine was starting to wear me out mentally and probably even physically, to be honest. Like, you know, it wasn't terrible. I don't get me wrong. It wasn't like hardship by all means, but it was still a mismatch, I think, between my personality, the rigidity of the structure, having to ask for permission is the kind of thing that I think for my personality is I needed to change that, right? And sort of, to be honest, like, you know, I'm not going to lie, sort of it was a bit hard financially, mentally, at least, to give up that type of steady income, but it felt almost like the only option, right? I just couldn't deal with it anymore.
Yeah, I think that's something a lot of us can empathize with, where the indie hacker path is not the obvious path, I would say. It's not a path people lay out for us, but if you are the kind of person that wants to be in control of your own life, maybe it's the only thing that makes sense for you. You know, if you really want to work on things that inspire you, it's hard to think of a way to be more self-directed than to be an indie hacker. So where are you at now? And how long ago was it that you quit your job now?
So it's been about 3.5 years. It was February 2019. So, you know, financially, I'm doing well right now, sort of paying my bills. I have some surplus income, so I'm happy, right? So it's great. Where I am right now, I've made so many different things along the way. Basically, every year almost looks different than the previous one. And actually, I like this, right? Some people think the instability of what I'm doing is an undesirable thing. But it's actually, I'm enjoying it. Again, I don't know, maybe it's just my personality, but the variation, the portfolio effect, right, the fact that I have many options on what I put my attention to, gives me peace of mind in a way that I can't even explain. That is that right now, if my main income stream were to disappear for whatever reason, I know that I have 5-6 things that I could shift my attention to that I was doing before that I sort of neglected so far because other things came up. And that's something that I like in my current work arrangement. Right? It's sort of, I like waking up in the morning and not having anything planned, and I direct my attention to what I feel mostly motivated on without feeling obligated that one thing should get all my attention. Right? Because it's not one thing that I'm running. Right? There's sort of many, many different small things.
Yeah. So at the risk of overemphasizing revenue, right? Because we've already established that's not the only reason to do anything, right? Like a lot of indie hackers still, though, would be curious, have you reached your previous like earnings through your small bets?
Not. No, I have not. And, you know, I don't know if people will believe me. I'm completely okay if I never, ever reach it. Right? I don't need that much so that I can live. I think most of us can live comfortably with much less. And but also psychologically, like, I don't feel the burden that I need to reach it. Like, who cares? It's what it was back then. I made some changes, to be honest, right? Because, you know, when I was earning that much, my living expenses were a bit higher. You know, I was living close to downtown Seattle. My, like, mortgage was super high. I could afford it back then, but, you know, like, what's the point right now? I think I'm living in a nicer place, but sort of a bit more remote and less expensive. But it's okay, you know, if it happens or if I earn more, I'll take it, of course. You know, it's a nice bonus. But my goal shifted from being upside driven by looking at what I can do to just being downside focused, that I focus on making sure I can make what I have sustainable, right? It's almost every thing that I do, I ask myself, is this going to help me improve the odds of remaining self-employed, right? Or remaining maintaining the lifestyle that I have. And I know it sounds like maybe the same thing, but it's not really, right? I mean, the kind of decisions you do when you think this way tend to be different than if you're just goal-oriented, right? So I have not, like, you know, transparency, because I know people like numbers. I think this year is my best year so far. I've already exceeded 100K in revenue, so still very good. I was a bit lucky, you know, I launched, I think, as you know, Anthony, the small bets community, and sort of it picked up really well, and it's been my main source of income in 2022. Previous years the year before and the one before were in the $200,000 mark, 220, 240, something like that. So not bad, right? I think, right, for most people, but I'm fine. I'm fine leaving money on the table. Right, but I'm buying more freedom, right? A lifestyle that better matches my preferences and all the other things that I enjoy with this kind of work arrangement.
In hindsight, would you have still done that corporate career ladder climbing, or would you have gone straight to indie hacking?
It's hard to say that. I think in hindsight, probably I would have left sooner. You know, I think in the beginning, I probably stayed there for a little bit purely for the money. I thought I should save a bit more, and I had the opportunity to save more in hindsight. And I know this probably is going to sound maybe ridiculous to some people, but I think I had too much runway, right? In a psychological way, sort of I had at least 5 years worth of expenses saved. If I had changed nothing, literally, right? I kept living with the kind of lifestyle that I had. So probably even more if I made some small tweaks. And I think having so much runway made me much more complacent. That made me think I have so much time. And what led me to do in the beginning of my self-employment journey was to take a lot of imprudent risks, like, you know, start building a product that had very low odds of ever succeeding, because it felt like I was just playing, you know, there's so much time. Eventually, I'll figure something out. I just took it easy. I just didn't have that sense of urgency. Whereas I think if I left, you know, 2-3 years sooner, probably I would have had a smaller runway, and I would probably have felt immediately that sense of urgency that I need to make something now. And luckily, right, sort of, that's what I said, I had a small crisis of anxiety at one point. Luckily, I clicked out of that, you know, idealism, right? And I started asking myself, okay, if I don't do something, I'm going to eventually, you know, the 5 years will pass relatively quickly as well. And I might end up with no savings, still having to go back to a job and nothing to show for. So I clicked out of it and said, you know, I need to find a way to make some money this month, What can I do to earn something this month? Right? And that changed my attitude. Right? I started ignoring all the big grandiose things, idealistic things, and I started being much more realistic. And it helped me find in some initial first few small wins. And some of those opened doors to other things. Some of them taught me that I enjoy doing things that until before I didn't even know I liked doing or that I was good at, right? And I think it's a much better way, right, to navigate the uncertainty. Just go after the low-hanging fruit. Ask yourself, how can you make $1,000 next month or this month? Do it, right, regardless of the ROI or how much sustainable you think it is, because those small wins build up, right, and open new doors and so many good things.
So your main shtick, if we could say, is like many small bets, right? Like do many things at once, try many different experiments. There's this, like, I'm sure you've heard of like the Pareto principle, right? Like 80% of our results tend to come from 20% of our inputs. Comes up a lot in like creativity, creative pursuits, business for sure. You find that kind of ratio among your small bets as well? Are they
absolutely
like big winners?
Yeah. No, absolutely. With everything. Like it's Pareto distribution all the way down. I mean, with the financial returns of my business activities, it's like that, you know, 80% of the revenue comes from 20% of the products. With my own productivity, right? I feel that with the work that I do, it's like same thing. 80% of the results come from 20% of the effort. You know, one of the problems, for example, with business activities is that it's hard to predict which 20% will pay off, right? That's sort of why I encourage, and I try to do it myself as well, to try tinker many small things, because, and you know, I wouldn't have guessed that, right, if I look at my portfolio of things, like this time 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I wouldn't have guessed which ones. And you know, not only that, right? But it's sort of, I would probably have guessed wrong, right? Because it's sort of the things that I felt had the best potential ended up making the least money, and vice versa, right? I mean, consider, right? I mean, my best example is that I made a Twitter course at one point, like 2 years ago, like in the start of the pandemic. It was April 2020. It was basically back then. I think I was one of the first few people as a engineering background starting to build my own audience. Certainly not the first person, but I was probably one of the few people who was sharing a lot online, and people were fascinated about how did you do it with no marketing experience? Like, how did you figure out what to tweet about, what to talk about, whatever? I didn't have a massive audience. Like, I had like 20,000 people, but still sort of biggish enough. And I realized that I had more to say about it, right? I mean, I was answering everyone as much as I could on Twitter, replies and DMs and whatever, but I felt like I have an hour of things to say. And I decided, let me just, you know, literally record myself. I did a Zoom meeting with myself, pressed record, and I just started talking and sharing my desktop and showing what I talk about, what I tweet about, how I think about things and what not to talk about and how I reply, how I set up my profile and these kinds of things. This product took me 16 hours to create, right? Just from literally the idea of let me do it to recording an hour, one take, to some minor editing, preparing the landing page, launching it, and so on and so forth. And this product made, it's about to cross the $100,000, right? It's insane to me, right? Just it's almost ridiculous, right? Something so small that I did on a whim with so little effort. And it's at 291K, I think, right now, two and a half years later. It's insane. Like, how could I have predicted this? I remember texting a friend of mine the day before, and sort of I told him I'm launching this, and I said, you know, if I make $5,000, I'll be happy, right? This is, I don't have high expectations from this, and it turned out to be, you know, orders of magnitude more. And the funny thing is that I have no explanation why. I mean, this is the thing. For some of my other products, I had another information product. I had a technical book called The Good Parts of AWS. It was just a programming book. This one, that one sort of, I can almost attribute the sales. Like I had some influential tweets when I launched it, right? And I could see those correlate to an increase in sales. I had some very strong testimonies that were also a bit random, but they helped me. And then sort of it plateaued, and you know, right now it's only making $600, $700 a month, you know, almost 3 years later. But this Twitter course is still making $3,000, $4,000 a month. And I have no explanation why. Like, I have no idea where people are coming from, why they're still buying it, why they're still recommending it. It's literally, and I have nothing that I can attribute to. This is why it grew, or this is why there was an inflection point in the graph. It's just all very mysterious to me. And I learned that it's okay, right? It's okay to not know why things work and why things don't. You try to understand as much as you can. You try to reuse patterns that you think are working for you to improve the odds of future things. But it's impossible, right? The world is just too complex to try to understand. Human psychology, because why does business succeed? I mean, business succeeds because it relies on human psychology. We need to launch something. It needs to resonate with people. People need to like it. They need to recommend it to their friends. The landing page needs to make them take the wallet out of their pocket and enter their credit card details. How do you motivate people to do these things? It's hard to know, right, what motivates people. I mean, there's patterns. Yes, you start to recognize if you do these things this way, it's better than some other way. But you're never really guaranteed. You're never really sure. And I think that's where a lot of the uncertainty in business comes from. It's just it's almost impossible to predict how people will behave. Right.
Do you find that stressful at all? Or have you done anything to overcome this idea of like my work and my results from that work are not necessarily... like causal, right? Like there's no necessarily.
It used to be stressful. Yeah, it used to be uncomfortable, I think is the right word in the beginning. But now I think it became easier, right? It's almost like a muscle, right? Mm-hmm. I think that the more you operate under uncertainty, the better you start to feel about it. Right? I think I started from this muscle was completely at, you know, zero in the beginning, right? I mean, I had lived all my life starting from early education to traditional employment and traditional careers, just with very little uncertainty in my life. You know, you start at 5 years old, first grade, whatever, you go to school, you study certain things, you maybe have an exam or a test, you know what you should be studying for, you go to the next level, next level, next level. At some point, you get your first job, you know, you're told what you need to do. You're told what you need to do to get promoted. You know how much you should be making and all these kinds of things. Sure, there's always some uncertainty and still even in that world, but it's a completely different domain of what I'm doing right now, right, where it's very hard to know anything. And in the beginning, I really struggled, right, because I would say, maybe it's an exaggeration. It felt very uncomfortable not knowing what I will be doing 6 months from now or how much I will be making 6 months from now. But I think the more I did it, I think the better I feel at being able to fend for myself. Like if I have to reinvent everything and start from scratch, or you know, I feel capable of doing it. Like, I don't know what I will be doing, but I'll probably just go to the system again, just try many things, like at the results, continue to make always small bets on things and sort of not get too much attached to product ideas. I like to say, you know, we should be treating product ideas like cattle, not like pets, right? It's sort of, we shouldn't be treating them something that are part of our identity, right? Something that we're so attached to. Because this messes with us, right? I mean, if we start taking imprudent risks, we start investing more than what we're willing to risk. But if we treat business ideas like cattle, you know, they're just expendable things. We take what we can from them. You know, they're just no love or other things. I think it helps us be much more disciplined, right, with how we invest our time and energy and take risks and things like that. So back to your answer, yes, it was uncomfortable, but it sort of got better a lot over time.
It's probably easier for you to maintain that like arm's length distance too when you're not investing as much up front, right? You're making small bets, so it's much easier to write them off versus if you invest.
It's part of the strategy, right? Because, you know, I'm human. Like if I invest 6 months in a project full time, and it's impossible to not feel highly disappointed and attached to it, right? But if you're just doing small things, you know, you put a weekend of effort into something, you almost expect it to fail, right? Yeah. And sort of, and then if it succeeds, you're happy, right? And it's one way to tame uncertainty, to deal with my psychology, to make things easier for myself. And this doesn't mean you don't keep improving existing things, right? I mean, some people think this just creates lots of tiny things. But for example, with my small bets project, right, I think like now I started a cohort course back in November of last year. It was just a small bet. Like again, sort of I had all these ideas that I'm talking about here that I thought I had lots to say about and lots of examples to share. And I said, let me do a 2-week live course over Zoom 3 times a week for 2 weeks. And I just shared it with a few previous customers. I didn't even broadly announce it. And it got sort of, you know, I opened 25 spots. It sold out quickly. I kept doing this pretty much back to back. I was doing it like twice a month, basically, until I arrived to the 12th iteration. And something interesting was happening that I noticed that I had set up a Discord server initially for housekeeping purposes, just to share the slides and some links. And like a community emerged on the Discord server almost on its own without me doing anything. I wasn't selling the community. I wasn't even mentioning it, right? It was something that happened on its own. And then I realized maybe I have something interesting happening here, right? Maybe this community, some people were telling me the community is worth more than the course that I'm here, you know, I was noticing this, noticing even if people weren't saying it, that there was value there. And I said, let me try another small bet sort of on this project. Like, let me try to, instead of selling the course, let me try to sell the community instead. And I tried to add some more value to the community. Right? So I started inviting guest speakers and I was paying them. Right? There was some financial risk as well. And I created this lineup of guest classes on topics that are related to business, you know, marketing, SEO, audience building, YouTubing, video editing, things like that. And we sort of this thing emerged as something very different from how it started, with a few small incremental additional small bets on top of it, right? I wouldn't have done all of this in the beginning, right? I wouldn't have tried to find guest speakers and create a community and whatever at start. I think this is a good example of doing things in very small steps because, you know, again, I had no idea where it was going to take. In fact, the path it ended up taking was different than probably the path that I would have imagined myself. But I think it's a much more prudent way of, you know, dealing with unpredictability and probably a much more reliable way as well, right? Of taking the good things and being a bit insulated from the negative side of not knowing what will happen.
How do you define a small bet when it is too large?
So I think for me, one of the critical things is to reduce the input given, like usually our time and energy, sometimes money, right? But for most of us, usually our time, to something that almost feels negligible. In my current situation, personally, right, me, I have a family, I have very little small time. For me, it has to be certainly less than a month of full-time work, but even a month starts to feel like a stretch. I think I'm more comfortable with 2 weeks and if possible even less, right? Like 1 week of full-time effort is probably the ideal sweet spot for me. What can I do with 1 week of time, of four, you know, roughly 40 hours of time? That starts to feel to me, you know, if nothing happens out of it, you know, it's not a big deal. I'm not going to lose sleep over it, right? It just happened. If I start investing much more, it starts to become much more difficult. So that's one thing, right? That's very, very important. But it's not enough, right? I mean, I'm not trying to try small, silly things that have no fighting chance of succeeding. I still try to be very, very selective with what I choose to do, right? So not just, you know, whatever I can do, I do it. Because even if I were to just do 1 week, so that I have a limited number of 1 week periods in a year or in my life, right? So even a week is costly by some degree. So the other part is the selection criteria. I try to invest my time in things that have at least a fighting chance of returning me the payoff that I'm expecting. I know it sounds a bit vague, right? But what this means to me is that I choose opportunities usually, right, that have usually low upside, right? These are unlikely that they're going to make millions of dollars or create some sustainable passive income stream or whatever. But on the other side, they are likely to make me something, right? They're likely to pay off, right? It's unlikely that they're going to be a complete failure or make nothing. Of course, there's always uncertainty, right? But it's sort of the trade-off that I tend to choose. I'd rather have something small that's working, higher probability of a small payoff rather than low probability of a large payoff, right? So that goes into my selection criteria. Like when I feel inspired and I bump into an opportunity, I ask myself, number one, can I shape this thing to be something that I can bring to market very quickly within a week or two? If not, either I ignore it or I try to figure out if there's a way to like shape it or cut scope or whatever. And second is, can I is does it seem plausible for me to sort of sell this, right, or make money from this, or make it work for me? If not, right, if it seems like it's highly unlikely, it's very speculative, I just leave it to someone else, right? It's not for me. It doesn't pass my filter.
A lot of people build side projects, but they don't all make money or find any kind of audience. You seem to have done a really good job of everything you launch, there's some way right away for people to pay you for it. And you have some way of reaching them. Mm-hmm. Is that strategic? Is that just like something you figured out? Have you launched anything that wasn't monetized?
So, you know, I do lots of things that I consider work that are not monetized, like, you know, my presence on Twitter. You know, I reply to, I think if you were to look at my statistics, like dozens of tweets a day, like most of my time spent on Twitter is replying to people rather than me tweeting. It's not something that's directly monetizable, right? I'm just there building my reputation, building an asset, I would call it, right? That is not financially quantifiable, right? It's just helping people, getting myself known, building my credibility, my reputation, and it varied on many different topics. Like when I started on Twitter, I was mostly talking about programming topics, something that I knew. Over time, it changed to audience building, in fact, right? And more lately on business and other things. But it changes based on what I'm doing, what I'm interested in, and so on and so forth. So that's certainly one thing. And, you know, I do it mostly on Twitter. In the past, I was doing it even in other places, on Reddit, other forums, and things like that. With regards to products, it is intentional because I think what I was sort of explaining to Radu before, right, it's sort of part of my selection criteria, is I avoid things that I don't think I would be able to sell, right? So it's not like I have this idea and I try to make it and then whatever happens, happens. I usually work backwards from the opportunity, right? And whether I'm able to reach the customers, right? Or I feel it's always a conjecture, of course, right? I certainly made many things that didn't sell or didn't sell as much as I thought they would sell, right? And they're sort of a failure in my book, right? But it's part of the game. But at least it's always something that I have a strategy. You know, I like treating business almost like the scientific method, right? Where you're trying something and you have a hypothesis. And my hypothesis is usually, like, let me give you an example that didn't succeed. This time last year, I tried to sell handmade cutting boards. That's something very different. That I started woodworking as a hobby. For a while, I was thinking it would be nice to get into the physical products e-commerce business. I wanted to experience it. And I was brainstorming, what could I sell? And I figured, you know, I'm making these cutting boards. I was sharing photos of them on Twitter. People were telling me they like them. And I said, let me try to create 6 designs and I try to sell them, right? And I made it as a small bet. It took me a couple of weeks to create the 6 designs and create the landing page and so on and so forth. And when I did this, when I started and I launched it, I had a hypothesis, right? That I'm going to be showing my designs and how I'm making them, some behind the scenes. And I should be able to get, you know, a handful of orders a month and maybe make $2,000, $3,000 a month from these high-end cutting boards. That these were sort of priced, you know, $200, $300 each. That was my hypothesis. Like, I launched them, and on the first day, it went great, right? I managed to get $3,000 in sales, like, within a few hours. But then it stopped, right? Sort of, I got another handful of orders the next month, but then I never sold anyone. Like, after the second month, I didn't sell any other cutting board ever, right? So my hypothesis failed for some reason, right? Mm-hmm. And again, I don't know why. Maybe they were too high priced. Maybe my marketing, maybe I wasn't talking about them too often. Maybe I needed something different in terms of marketing them, but it didn't work. But I think it's a good way of doing things. That is that you do something with an expectation of a payoff, and then you try it within the constraints that you define, and then you assess, like, did it really work or it didn't. So, right, if it worked, right, you might be able to, you know, improve it or optimize it or do something more on it. If it doesn't work, you know, you also have the options of optimizing or changing, but it's a lesson learned, right? At least there's some information there.
Cutting boards seem like a big mismatch with your audience and your typical content. It doesn't seem that surprising that cutting boards wouldn't sell to an
audience. Could be, yes, it could be. It's very possible that's one of the reasons, yeah. But you never know, right? I mean, again, sort of, I've when I launched the Twitter course, back in April 2020, it also felt like a mismatch, right? Because back then I was a programming Twitter account, right? I was in tech Twitter, and this was something a bit different, right? So maybe it was less of a mismatch because it was still sort of targeted to people like me, right? But, you know, again, like you never really know, right? I've certainly seen other people succeed with seemingly mismatched products and services. So it depends. But it could be a factor for sure.
I feel like we can't talk about you and your success without at least touching on the audience, the gigantic audience you've built, and how quickly you've built it. Did you go, like when you stopped working for the corporate overlord and started working for yourself, did you have in mind like, okay, like I'm going to build an audience, that's going to be the main way I'm going to reach people, or did it just happen more organically?
So it was intentional, but I wasn't even thinking about audience terms back then. I remember my first day, right, where I was working for myself, and I started, okay, what can I do? And I started thinking, okay, I know how to write software, I have some expertise in this domain, I know how to maybe do some basic web design and create my own marketing page, so on and so forth. But I realized that I was absolutely unknown to the world, right? I mean, I had no reputation outside of the couple of companies that I had worked with. Like, I was literally completely unknown, no reputation, no credibility. So initially what I wanted to, wasn't even thinking of building an audience. I said, probably the best thing to do for me right now is to start building a name for myself, like making myself known a little bit, right? Just by helping people. And in fact, that's what I did. Like, I was going everywhere. Stack Overflow, Reddit, LinkedIn, Twitter, the Hacker News and the Hackers, all the forums where people hang around. I was there. I was refreshing the page multiple times a day. Any question that I felt I could answer, I was answering. Then I was just trying to help people as much as I could. Same thing. This was almost as well a bit of a small bets experiment without thinking about it that way back then. But it was trying many different things. Some things I started to notice that, you know, they weren't really working for me. Others, I kept doing them for longer. You know, eventually I gravitated to Twitter as my main source. But for a long time, for many months, I tried many, many different things. And I think it was a good decision, right, sort of to build the name. I think, again, I wouldn't necessarily make it, it's not just the number of followers or having an audience. It's just, you know, there was some group of people, maybe a few hundred people who I had helped before. They knew who I was. They knew something about me. And I think it made everything so much easier to do, right? I mean, when you have a little bit of credibility, a little bit of reputation, right? The audience itself, like the actual number of followers, was also helpful, right? At least back then. I mean, right now with algorithmic changes on Twitter, I don't really know whether it's still as effective as it was back then. But the fact that I could announce something, right, and I would have a few thousands of people, right, seeing it without being subject to lots of algorithms and other things, even though, as I'm saying, like nowadays things are changing a bit. It was also as well very, very useful. But I don't think, like, don't get me wrong, like I don't think building an audience, building a social media presence is a requirement by all means. Like, many people that I know who have been executing the small bet strategy, the one that I promote, without social media, just by pure search engine optimization, relying on other platforms, personal connections, other things, right, that can still be helpful in getting attention and building credibility, right? So, but I'm glad I did it, right, personally, right? It certainly have been a great asset to have.
A lot of your content, a lot of the stuff that's gone viral is like build in public type stuff, right? You post like, oh, I launched a product, this is how much it's grown. A lot of people try to build in public, but don't kind of ever get that kind of reach. You feel like you've got some kind of secret sauce there? What sets you apart in that sphere?
There, good question. Interesting. You know, it's going to sound maybe again vague. Right? I like to post things that I feel. So let me take a step back. I study my behavior a lot when I see somebody else's tweets and it resonates with me. Right? Sometimes I see something from somebody, right? They share something, whether it's a building public thing or something else. And I feel I like it. I feel like, wow, this tweet really clicked in me. And I reflect on it, right? And it's sort of, I almost take like a mental snapshot of it. Like, I don't, many times I don't know why it resonated, why it had something, but there's something in it. And I think when I try to share things, I try to remember those things and I try to do the same thing. I make the assumption that if that tweet that I saw worked on me, its chances are it's going to work on other people as well. The tone, the amount of detail, how it was presented, and those kinds of things. They're very hard things to describe, right? And probably if I were to say maybe there is a secret sauce, is doing this, right? It's just being honest with myself and noticing what is working for me and trying to replicate it. Right? I sometimes feel like people share in public, but maybe they don't share. They just share 99%, but that little 1% that would have made it a bit better, right? Sometimes they hold back a little bit, or sometimes maybe even the opposite, right? I mean, for example, on Twitter, the power of summarizing is better. I'd rather you, personally for me, for example, I'd rather get what you're trying to tell me in one tweet rather than a long tweet thread with, you know, starting with my background story and everything that happened. And, you know, and again, I'm not saying like whether that works or doesn't work, at least for me, I prefer the condensed, terse, enough detail to make me feel inspired. You know, that's the thing that I discovered probably. Okay, I think this is a good thing to share. I think what people want most is not knowledge or information. There's lots of knowledge or information to be had. What people lack and what people look for when they go on Twitter and probably in other places is inspiration. That is that something intangible that's very hard to describe, that once they see something from you, something in their mind activates, some new neurons and that were dormant, right? They start firing up. That's what people really want. It's not knowing the number or knowing some marketing strategy or whatever. It's just feeling that a minute before they didn't feel inspired, after they saw your piece of content, your tweet or whatever, suddenly they felt like, oh, maybe I could do something like this myself, maybe in another domain or with a twist or with something else, right? They want to feel that kind of thing, right? And I think it's good to shape, these kinds of building public content. It's not just, I'm just documenting what I'm doing, take it or leave it. How can I inspire other people, right? Of course, still with the facts and with everything, that I'm not recommending exaggerating things or whatever, or hiding important things. But how can I inspire people, right? How can I make a few people see something that until a minute before they weren't even considering, right? And I think what's happening with some of my building public tweets is like that, right? I mean, people are saying, you know, I never imagined that you could make a living, you know, teaching what you already know, right? Selling your sawdust, essentially, right? I mean, it's basically what some of my products are, my information products. It's literally things that I've already figured out, and I'm just sharing them with others in a packaged productized form for like $25 or $15. And I tell people, look, if people are willing to pay $5 to get a coffee at Starbucks, chances are they will pay $5 to learn something from you that you've learned over the last 10 years, right? It's an idea that clicks with people, and sort of I demonstrated that it is possible. Again, it's not easy or predictable or whatever, like lots of uncertainty in how much it works or doesn't, which I try to not hide, right? How much volatility there is, but it opens people's eyes to things that they weren't aware of until minutes before.
You describe your businesses as cattle, not pets, right? So cattle, eventually, they either sell them or you slaughter them.
Yeah.
So we know you slaughtered at least the cutting board idea. How many of your cattle would you say you've slaughtered, and have you sold any?
So I haven't, to be completely honest, I think I haven't slaughtered or sold anything yet. Even my cutting boards business is still over there. Like if I get an order, I will make it. Like it costs me nothing to have these kinds of things still on the market. Right? And actually, this is another part of my selection criteria. When I start working on things, I like choosing things that I like to call where time is my friend, that I won't feel the burden that I need to shut down, right? Which basically, I think this fundamentally boils down to things that have very low running costs of keeping on the market. So like, I mean, what does keeping my cutting board business online cost me? Nothing, right? Literally, right? It's just there, the sales page is there, somebody remembers and places an order, I make it on demand, right? That's it, right? And same things with many of the other things that I do, right? It's just, I don't need to feel that I need to decide whether to shut it down or not, right? And I think it's a very nice property for many reasons, right? First of all, it's just to avoid this dilemma of like, should I shut it down? Should I not? And things like that. But in addition, you never know, right? I mean, what I like, for example, let's take the good parts of AWS. I mean, this is a successful bet, right? It made over six figures. It made, I think, over $140,000, $140,000 in sales, just something small that I did, a short technical book. But right now, it's not making much. Right? It's making about $600, $700 a month. But if I wanted to, for example, I could go back and try to promote it again. Right? In fact, I was thinking that maybe I should start tinkering with some paid ad campaigns and things like that. You know, I have the option, not the obligation, to go give these things more attention in the future. Like if I feel bored or I have spare time or I feel inspired or something were to happen, right, I could always go do that. And that's something that I enjoy. I enjoy having, right, that option, but not obligation. Right? I try to avoid the obligations. And I try to cultivate lots of different options, and I don't know where to spend my time, and so on and so forth.
So we're coming to our end of our scheduled time. We'll use the second half of this for like one-on-ones, which you're welcome to stay for if you want to meet some of the other indie hackers here today. But do you have anything? Well, first, like, give yourself some plugs. Like, where should we find you on the internet?
Probably the best way to find me is on Twitter at @DVasallo. I'm typing it in the chat. That's where I am. I'm there every day. You know, Twitter is my inspiration generation machine. It's where I sort of spend hours a day looking at what other people are doing. And I also try to respond to everyone who asks me a question, right? So feel free to reach out. And I post myself as well almost daily whenever I have something interesting to share.
And last question, is there any one thing you feel like indie hackers are doing wrong that they should fix in general?
Yeah, I think I know it's going to be blunt, right? But I think sometimes indie hackers tend to be too deluded, right, with what they're doing, right? I did this mistake myself in the beginning. You know, I didn't talk about it much, but I built my own software as a service user base. I'm almost embarrassed to say that I spent over $150,000 of my own money into it, right? Which pains me to mention it.
That was not a small bet.
It's not a small bet, yeah. Sort of, and a lot of time as well, right? And lots of complexities and headaches. And many people do something like this, whether it's of that magnitude or a bit smaller. And I highly encourage people to reconsider, right? This is not the only way. Right? Business is much more random than it seems. It's not like your job, right? Where if you work hard, eventually destiny will ultimately reward you. There's no guarantee that destiny will reward you. I think you should, you know, experiment, tinker. You're like searching for buried treasure underground. You can't just pick one spot and keep digging forever there, because if the treasure is not in that spot, no matter how much you dig, you'll never find it. Right? You need to search, scatter, tinker, experiment, try many small things. And by the way, sometimes this means, you know, taking up some freelancing gigs, whatever. It doesn't necessarily mean to be product businesses. This is something that helped me a lot. Like, diversify. Don't take something that takes all your time, of course, but have some stable income, something different. Build a portfolio, essentially, of different income streams as much as possible. It helps a lot with peace of mind. And I think paradoxically, it also helps with finding good luck from products, right? Because you're more exposed, you're more relaxed, and so on and so forth.
All right. This was Daniel Smallbets of Vasallo. Thank you so much for coming to Indie Worldwide. I hope you'll stick around for some of these one-on-ones.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thank you.